Families are struggling in this recession, but people on fixed incomes are being battered as well, particularly senior women.
61% of older women can't afford basic living expenses.
Plus, combining the generations to solve two issues, and something you may not have known about one of America's more intimidating natives. I'm Susan Barnett, and it's coming up on 51%, The Women's Perspective. The impacts of the recession are grim. Cuts to programs that help the hungry and the unemployed are leading to a dramatic drop in the number of people on welfare and a huge spike in the number of families going hungry. A recent Washington Post article indicated that the welfare rolls have shrunk by 55% since 1996, down to a little less than 2 million families. But the number of families living in poverty has risen from a little over 6 million to 7.26 million. Sharon Johnson, senior correspondent for Women's E-News, has been studying the numbers and finding there's another population that's in crisis, our seniors. Sharon, I am seeing stories in the paper talking about the impact of prior cuts in various types of aid to people who are poor, that people are not making ends meet, that they're selling blood, that they're collecting bottles to redeem, selling their food stamp food and then eating with relatives in an attempt to get a little money in their pockets. And you're talking about a specific population. What are you finding?
What I'm talking about is the population over 65. And this is a very important segment of America because one out of eight Americans is now over 65. Also, the number of people over 85 happens to be the fastest growing segment of the population. So we have to be very concerned about these vulnerable Americans.
And what is happening?
Well, a very interesting study came out by an organization called Wider Opportunities for Women. It's a Washington-based organization that works to improve the economic security of women and families. And they found that 61% of older women can't afford basic living expenses such as food, housing, and medical care. They also found that 41% of older men can't afford basic living expenses, which I think shows how older Americans are struggling.
And a simple statement like that makes you say, oh, that's terrible. But then what does that mean? When you can't meet those expenses, what are these people doing?
What is happening is that they don't follow medical advice. Half of all prescriptions aren't filled. People have to decide whether or not they're going to go to the doctor for an eye check, or are they going to spend the money on air conditioning so that they don't pass out in the summer. They also go hungry. Food pantries across the country report record numbers of older people who are coming to them for assistance. Also, many older people have to move in with other relatives, which is difficult for the sandwich generation that is struggling to support their children and put them through college and also save for their own retirement.
And these are people who are eligible for Medicare, for Medicaid, for Social Security, and those things just aren't cutting it?
Absolutely. In fact, all of these people are receiving Social Security and also Medicare. One of the things that I found quite alarming, Susan, according to the study, was how dependent people are on Social Security. The study found that women were more dependent on Social Security than men. Social Security represented 77% of the annual income of women compared to 59% for men. Also, women's Social Security checks were lower than men. They received $4,500 less per year than men.
Are there moves underway to basically further cut entitlement programs, as they're known?
Absolutely. Last summer, I did an article for our news service, Women's E! News, about the dangers of the payroll tax furlough where individuals were not going to be paying their share of Social Security taxes into the fund to help them have about $400 a year more to spend on basics. However, this is dangerous. Although the federal government was going to pick it up for 1 year, there's always a danger that Social Security will payroll tax holidays will become permanent, and then the trust fund will be affected.
And there's also always the concern just about Social Security itself. As the population gets older, there's consensus that it just doesn't have enough to continue to support the number of people who will need it.
That's an excellent point.
So what's the answer?
Well, I think there are many things that we can do as individuals as well as a society. I think one of the things that we can do as women is that we can continue to fight long and hard to make sure that we have equal pay for equal work. One of the problems that older women have is that they have tended to work in six occupations, clerical work, retailing, waitressing, etc., which pay very low wages. As a result of that, they don't have a chance to save. They certainly don't have a chance to establish retirement funds on their own. Many of them don't have benefits. So they don't have much money when it comes to their own particular savings. Another problem is that even women in management and in professional jobs, they often don't get the same pay as well. So we have to work hard, I think, to get equal pay for equal work. Another thing I think that would help tremendously, Susan, is if we paid more attention to child care. Many women drop out of the labor force for anywhere from a year to sometimes 5 years, and because they just can't afford child care, it's not available where they live, etc. And consequently, when they return to the labor market, they don't earn as much, and they can't save, and of course, they haven't been putting any money in Social Security, so their checks are going to be less there, too.
And I'm assuming you're watching the presidential race. Do you have any sense of which way the election could impact this issue?
Well, I think, as we have seen so far, Susan, the presidential election, women are going to be a very important factor in this election. I recently did an article for our news service where I pointed out that in the 2010 congressional races, women didn't turn out. And as a result of this, politicians were elected who really didn't have women's best interest in heart. And as a result of that, we've already seen cutbacks in things for contraception. We've seen an attack on birth control. But I think there's also a bigger story to be told, and that is what has been happening to the finances of older people, especially women. I would hope that in the coming months that we're going to hold the feet of both parties to the fire and say, what are you going to do to ensure that older people can afford basic living expenses such as food, housing, and medical care? One of the big issues, I think, which came out in the survey, is the problem of housing. People who were renters are subjected to dramatic changes in housing costs. 74% of older people in the survey who were renters couldn't pay their basic expenses. So, and even owning a home was not a solution if you had a mortgage. So I would think one of the things we're going to have to look at is what are these parties going to do about housing? Are we going to get all these bad loans finally out of the banks? Are we going to establish complexes where people can age in place? All of these issues are going to be very important. What we're seeing here, Susan, is we're seeing a lot of invisible poor. People who we see at the bus station every day or people that we pass on the street, they may have jobs, but they're barely making it. So, yes, there's lots of instances out there, and I'm going to be doing a lot of articles in the coming months.
Sharon Johnson is senior correspondent for Women's E-News. Find out more at womensenews.org. Coming up, an answer to one of the big challenges faced by seniors in today's world, plus some really big babies prowling the mountains. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1189. One of the challenges faced by older folks beyond the concerns of making ends meet is isolation. In Minnesota, there's a program that combines two populations and benefits both of them. The Day Services Program at Mount Olivet Church in South Minneapolis serves 35 seniors and 65 children from infants to preschool. KFAI producer Will Hale has the story.
This may sound like the usual childcare center, with kids playing and having fun. But this is an unusual place. Mount Olivet Day Services combines childcare and senior center in the same building to create an opportunity for intergenerational interaction.
I'm Jenny Cullen, and I'm the director of Mount Olivet Adult Day Services in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We are unique in that we have both a child center and an adult center. Our main mission is intentional, intergenerational interaction. So our purpose is to bring people of different ages together, and we found that there are many benefits to both age groups. For the seniors, the adults, seeing the children adds a lot of energy and excitement to their day. Every morning we do some type of intergenerational activity with the children. Monday morning we have a music therapist who comes, and different classrooms come out to our area for a music class. The preschoolers might come another morning for show and tell. The young toddlers might come another morning for an art activity, or the older toddlers come for a game. The infants, they just come. They just act like infants, and they don't have to do anything special. They're just happy to see them, and, you know, sometimes people will hold them.
Patty cake, bake her a man. Bake me a cake as fast as you can. Roll it, pat it, and mark it with a B.
My name is Katie Mikulitz. I am the Director of Child Services at Mount Olivet Day Services. I think one of the big pieces of the job is finding activities that the adults and the children can participate in together.
Games are a popular intergenerational activity. A game as simple as chutes and ladders can be a new experience for both kids and adults.
And then you spin. And then she spins, and then she moves. How many marks that she got on the spinner there, I think.
No, it's your turn.
Yeah, you spin first. You get
no,
the
you
big.
Do it like that.
Okay, how many did she get? Okay, put it on the one. Now count up four. Two, three, four.
Music has a special place in building a bridge across the generations in a way that everyone can understand.
I just love the kids. Oh, we have a lot of fun, and then I read to them, and we talk, and then they come up and ask me if I brought my harmonica, and I said, oh, yeah. So they said, well, would you play some tunes? And I said, sure, and their favorites are usually Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, or You Are My Sunshine. Those seem to be their favorites.
Sharing our lives in an intergenerational experience amplifies the richness of all of our communities. This is Will Hale for KFAI.
I wish you bluebirds in the spring to give your heart a song to sing and then a kiss, but more than this, I wish you love, and in July a lemonade to cool you in some leafy glade. I wish you health, but more than wealth, I wish you love.
We love you.
10,000 fresh voices on KFAI is made possible by listeners like you and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Now let's move from human babies to the babies of spring. True hibernators, and especially black bears, are wandering the woods behind my home. The babies, in early April, were already huge, which led me to wonder when they were born. Turns out, winter's birthing time for mama black bears. Jay Anderson of WTIP North Shore Community Radio spoke to local naturalist Chell Anderson about something called brown fat.
Yeah, last couple weeks of January is, generally speaking, when the bear mothers are, who are going to be mothers, anyway, the bears who are going to be mothers are giving birth to their cubs. And wow, what an amazing thing to consider, you know. And gosh, you know, this year we don't have a ton of snow, and I tend to kind of think, oh, it's not as cozy as it might otherwise be or as it was, say, last year. But then I reassure myself by remembering that bears, we've talked about before, have this kind of unique and distinctive way of hibernating. It's not among the mammals that do hibernate, it isn't all exactly the same. And the bears have their own very unique kind of strategies and physiology of hibernation. And of course, that includes giving birth while they're in their den in hibernation mode, and then caring for those cubs, supporting them, you know, nursing them until hibernation finally ends. And that is powered in large measure by something they share with other mammal hibernators, like the woodchuck and the jumping mouse and the bats, you know, some of which we've talked about before. And that is the secret that they have, which is that they, their bodies, produce something called brown fat. Now, you and me, and most of the other critters out there, whether they hibernate or not, that don't hibernate, rather, we can't go there. Brown fat is not an option for us, no matter how much time we spend during the summer just feeding on Häagen-Dazs and all our favorite fatty foods. We would not produce any brown fat that might help us get through the cold of the winter. But these hibernators, mammal hibernators, do create brown fat. And the reason that brown fat is so advantageous is that unlike the animals that produce only white fat, they skip that intermediate step of shivering. So white fat is the fat that's burned when an animal shivers. And it's using muscles to produce heat. So the muscles, just like if your hand gets cold and you wing it around, you know, windmill it around your arm, or you run up and down, or any kind of muscle movement produces heat. And that's what shivering does. And that is, animals use white fat to shiver. So the chickadees, when they're shivering to stay warm through the night inside their down coats, they're using white fat. The fox, all of our mammal, you know, neighbors are doing that. But these hibernators, they have brown fat. And brown fat is advantageous because there's a direct use of the fat. They skip that intermediate step. And the power generators at the cellular level, the mitochondria, they actually use the fat directly, brown fat. And it's oxidized by the mitochondria, and that chemical reaction creates the heat. So they skip that intermediate step of shivering. They go, there's a direct connection between the fat that's available to burn and at the cellular level, and voila, it's a very efficient way of using this reserve to help maintain the temperature that you need to maintain during hibernation. In the case of the bear, that's, as we've talked about before, that's a higher temperature than most other hibernating mammals have. So how well a mother bear or any bear has done at laying on brown fat over the course of the summer and especially into the fall as they're really preparing for the going to ground, as they say, really has a huge impact on how successful they are both at surviving themselves and at adequately supporting the needs of their cubs once their cubs are born. And of course, the developing cub fetus needs nutrients from the bear, mother bear, during that period of time too. So it's really key that they do that, have success at doing that throughout the summer and fall. And if they don't, then of course fetuses can be aborted. They may be unsuccessful at supporting their cubs once they're born. So, and it turns out that it also can have a long-term effect on the reproductive success of their cubs. Just like with other mammal children, including our own, if we get good nutrition and good health and healthy nutrition at a young age, we tend to be healthier and more successful physically as we get older. So they've made some interesting connections between how the good health of the mother and her ability to support the cubs and their ultimately their reproductive success if they're female, as female bears.
Do female bears put on white fat too, or is it just brown fat?
You know, they may put on a little bit of white fat. I'm not absolutely sure about that. It's a really good question, and I've wondered about that myself, but I haven't been able to find any really good source of information about just what the percentage might be or how that might work. So I don't have a good answer.
So the brown fat is an adaptive thing, right?
The brown fat is definitely an adaptive thing, like it is in bats, like it is in jumping mice and woodchucks. All those species, these true hibernators, utilize brown fat.
So if you're going to hibernate, you're going to have brown fat.
Got to figure that angle out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one thing that's going on. A few other things. I've definitely been seeing flocks of waxwings around town. If you have fox or wolf trails around wherever you're frequenting, you may see a lot more evidence of scent marking as those species start to get involved with their mating season. And then maybe the last thing I'll mention is that I would encourage people to make time and find a place to kind of linger and enjoy this time of year when we have the chance, even if we don't live on the lake, but even if we are living on the lake itself, to the big lake, to watch these long extended sunrises and sunsets. You know, it really won't be that long, and the sun won't be setting and rising over the lake. And I love this time of year for the low angle sun. It just has so many beautiful color and shadow qualities that we don't get at any other time of year. And that includes these beautiful sunsets that we can and sunrises that we can have over the lake. So now's the time to fit that in.
Jill Anderson, botanist and plant ecologist, thanks for helping us understand, well, lots of current stuff.
Sure, you're welcome.
Other Northwoods Naturalist interviews with Chell Anderson can be found on the Boreal homepage and on the website of WTIP.org. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at WAMC.org. You can also find a regular column related to 51% at feminist.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.